You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Knife Talk is sponsored by Evenheat, the manufacturer of the finest knife heat treat ovens available. Find your next heat treat oven at evenheat-kiln.com. So welcome to episode 21 of Knife Talk. Now today I'll be speaking with the maker of some of the most wild and lethal looking knives you're likely to see. Today I'm speaking with Neil Kamimura. So welcome to the show, Neil. How are you?
Oh, thanks for having me.
Oh, it's good to be speaking. I'm a really big fan, so it's great to finally get you on the show.
Well, I'm honored. I mean, there's some of the best knife makers in the world on here, and then there's amateur me, so I'm honored.
I wouldn't say what you do is amateur, not at all. But I'm going to start at the very beginning. So how long have you been making knives?
Right now, I'm about a year and 7 months.
Really? That's all? That's surprising.
Yeah. Yep.
Wowzers. And are they all forged? Do you forge all of your knives?
Everything is forged. I did one stock removal knife, like, you know, just grinded a leaf spring, and I hated it because I hate grinding. And then so I forged my next knife, and that was, about a year and 7 months ago.
Right. Okay. So, I mean, I see from your Instagram that you make knives from files and leaf springs and so on. So do you have a favorite steel that you work with?
No, because I'm a beginner, I typically stick with one steel. So, you know, I started with leaf spring. I moved to, you know, like Farrier Rasps and files. And then I moved to like 10 series steel. And then I moved to 52-100. But I take my time. I don't really jump around too much. You know, I make like 10 test blades. I break them all. I flex them. I beat them. You know, I really go through each steel and kind of, you know, make sure that they're good before I sell them.
Yeah. I mean, so why knives? What got you into, so, you know, hitting the shit out of lumps of metal? What got you into that?
I built lowriders before as a hobby. You know, I've always fabricated and worked on cars. And my great grandfather came from Japan to Hawaii as a kid. And he was, put in the sugarcane camps, and he became a blacksmith. And that's what he learned. And he made sugarcane knives, and he became famous for it. And his name was Teiji Kamimura. And he had a shop, a blacksmith shop in Hilo, Hawaii, from like 1930s to 1990. He died when I was about 9 years old, but they named me after him. So my name is Teiji. My full name is Neil Teiji Kamimura. And so, you know, I started watching Forged in Fire season one, season two, you know, and I was talking about it to my son and, you know, telling him that, you know, my great grandfather is in the Japanese American History Museum and, you know, he's famous for making sugarcane knives. And my son told me you should do it. And, you know, that's kind of where it started. What happened was my mom ended up committing suicide. And I didn't want to work on cars anymore. I didn't really want to do anything. And so one of my friends brought me a forge and said, hammer your feelings out, son. You know, and I made one knife and it took me about a week. You know, and then in the next 8 months, I made about 70 knives. because that's about what it took to kind of put my emotions and what I was kind of going through, you know, away. And then by that time, Forge and Fire had asked me to be on. And so I went and competed with 8 months experience on my first episode.
Oh, wowzers. but it's in the blood, isn't it? So, you know, it's been handed down to you. It's a passion that you've got. It's in the blood.
I definitely think that there's something to be said about it being your heritage. I think you take it a little bit more serious. Being that my great-grandfather was well-known for it, kind of puts a level of where I want to be, too.
Yes, yeah. Okay. So if you weren't making knives for a living now, what would you be doing? I guess that would be cars then, right?
No, I mean, I own another company. I've owned a pumping environmental company for 12 years. So that's why I have the advantage of my office is a bladesmithing shop because, you know, I set up my guys from there. I answer all my emails, all my phone calls. But instead of it being an air-conditioned office with a secretary, it's just me and a bunch of anvils and forges and, you know, grinders.
Not the conventional office.
So I don't do bladesmithing for a living. I have another business.
Ah, right. Okay. So I'm interested to know, would you consider yourself an artist? I mean, you know, you've mentioned, designing cars and making cars in the past. I mean, do you have any other sort of creative outlets?
You know, I struggled with that word in the beginning because I didn't really feel I was an artist, but I think in time, I've accepted it that what I do is more of an art form than, I'm not a commercial knife maker. Like, you can't really ask me to make something to a specific dimension and I will do it. I won't. Mm. You know, I kind of do whatever I want. And so that's kind of like, you know, there's commercial artists and commercial musicians that do things. And I'm definitely not one of those people. I kind of just create kind of what I want. I mean, you can kind of give me a basic of what you're looking for and what your use is. But I typically just make what I want every day because I look at it as an art form and it's something that reflects me and my style and my proportion to, you know, knife proportion is a huge thing. It's just like on cars, you know, just the lines and the curves and the functionality.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, you live in Hawaii. So where I'd imagine it's very hot and humid. So how do you deal with that heat when you have, you know, a raging forge in the shop too?
Well, I'm third generation born Hawaii. It's where I'm comfortable. I'm actually less comfortable if it was cold.
Really? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You wouldn't like it here in France then, because at the moment it's bloody freezing.
No.
So describe your shop to us.
I have a bay, you know, it's like the man cave of knife building. It basically, it's just a 25 by 30 foot bay. And, what's in it is I have two anvils. I have a 100-pound Texas Ferry Supply anvil. That's what I, the first anvil I bought. And then I have a 200-pound anvil. And then, I have a Coalworks, hydraulic forging press, and then I have an AMK grinder that I use, and I try and buy everything American made. I'm definitely a believer in American craftsmen and what they represent, and so even my all the way down to the belts I use are American made. I only use combat abrasives belts. That's just something that I thoroughly believe in.
Yeah, I've been using them too, and geez, they're low grits. They're sort of 60, 80 grits. They're animals, aren't they?
Well, you know, people ask me all the time, like, some of the, how I make knives so fast or how I get them so sharp, and a lot has to do with technique, but also having a good company like that. For me, I live in Hawaii, you live in France. I mean, these people will adapt to you to help you get their product. And that's something that I appreciated with Combat, was that they actually took the time to help me, because I was paying more for shipping than I was for the belts, you know?
Yeah, me too. Me too. Yes. Yeah. So I mentioned in your introduction that your style of knives, they're pretty badass. So how would you describe your style?
You know, I'm not going to pin myself to like a rustic or, you know, a Bruta Forge or whatever. You know, I actually wasn't a knife person before this. You know, I built lowriders. So like, I don't know all the terms of knives and what. And I just basically try and always put at least two to three elements into a knife as far as coloration and texture. I try and make sure that the lines all flow together. But my main goal is for someone to see it and not just look at it as a weapon or it's a tactical, like, killing instrument. It's a piece of art that is taken from raw materials. I mean, you can't get any raw. I mean, I use stabilized wood that my friend makes next door to me. You know, I go to the junkyards and I cut pieces off cars. I mean, can I get any more raw than how I'm doing it? And so my object is for that, a first time knife buyer to, you know, a mother of three to, you know, all aspects of life to look at and be like, oh, that's awesome. Because if you think about it, in this world, everybody uses a knife, you know?
Mm. Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, every household has a knife. So the way I look at it is I want people to change the perception of it, that it's not like some Renaissance collecting thing or some, you know, it's something that's unique and it stands out. And that's what my object is.
Yeah, yeah. So let's say when you finish a particularly sort of great knife, do you ever try and replicate that, or is every knife that you do completely different?
No, I mean, the reason why I don't take a lot of orders, I mean, is because they want me to replicate something I've already made. If I did that, I still would be making Ras Tontos for the rest of my life. And, you know, my main object is not to sell the most knives. My object is to better myself every day. And the only way I can better myself every day is to push myself. So I rarely make I don't have any jigs or any nothing. I don't even measure anything. Yeah. Rarely, you know.
Hmm. Okay. So I'm not going to dwell on your appearance on Forged in Fire, because we've been lucky enough to have quite a few contestants on the show now. but you've been on twice, which is incredible. So you'll know more than most.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about your experiences on the show?
So I've been on Forged in Fire twice. The first time was I had 8 months experience. I had never met another knife builder in my life, you know, besides my great grandpa when I was nine. I was 100% self-taught. The only thing that I ever had was Jay Nielsen's videos. And then he was judging me. You know what I mean? So there was a lot of hype behind of it, because they never had let somebody on with 8 months experience. You know, I was the first. And so I had a lot to prove, but that show is legit. It's real. There's no, I mean, you know, there's a little things here and there, but everybody on that show, main interest is to protect the integrity of the show and the knife builders. And that's what was really cool. And then the second time that I went on, I had 1 year experience. And that kind of was a heavy episode for me. Because, one, I was going against guys that, you know, Ray Smith has been doing it as long as I've been alive, you know, and he's an awesome person. There was the anniversary of my mom's death when I went up there, you know, it was exactly 1 year. And I was going through some emotional things, and everything we did, I had never done before. But, you know, what it comes down to is what I think about every time I'm on that show is that my son's going to watch it. And, you know, quitting is not an option. And me being from Hawaii, I represent a community of people that stand behind you. And we're, you'll never meet somebody from Hawaii that wants to be associated with anywhere else. We could live in the mainland for 20 years and be still born and raised Hawaii. We're very proud people. And that's something that I carry when I go on TV, you know, and I take it extremely serious. But I love the show. I love the people on the show. I love the contestants, the judges. I credit everything to them. I mean, they leap me 10, 20 years, you know, as far as exposure and opportunity. And so I owe a lot to that TV show. And I owe everything to that TV show. You know, it's what made my career.
Yeah. And for those who don't know, who maybe haven't seen the show, because I know if you're not living in the US, it's quite difficult to get hold of the show. So Neil actually won the first time that he was on. He became the champion the first time that he was on Forged in Fire. And he was then invited back for the Champions Edition. So what did you learn from the show?
You know, I wouldn't necessarily say I learned anything from the show because it's such a rush process, but the opportunity that it opened up for me after I was done filming the two episodes, I was able to train under Jay Nielsen with Canister Damascus. I trained under a competitor, Ray Smith. I was able to train with Ray Kirk in Oklahoma. I did collaborations with Ryu, Theo, you know, and then now one of the Forge and Fire contestants, Demetrius, who I was on the first episode, actually moved to Hawaii, and me and him worked together. We're going to start next week. He literally lands Tuesday, and we ship all of his equipment here already. And so we're gonna start doing some work together. Not so much knives, but more architectural blacksmithing.
Yeah. Wow. So it's really changed things for you. Wow.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Hmm. So just like on the show, you seem to put your blades through some really rigorous testing. So have you got a favorite way of testing a blade?
I don't have a favorite test. I mean, basically, I feel as a new knife builder, being so new, I have to prove myself. And also my mentor is Jay Nielsen, who is the test king. And so you can make something as pretty as you want, but if it breaks or it doesn't cut, it doesn't really, you know, it's not functioning. And so, and I did have troubles with that in the beginning, you know, like getting the geometry just right and this and that. And so the best way to find your weaknesses is to try and kill it.
But that's disheartening, right? Spending a few days working on a knife then, you know, particularly on those ice blocks.
Nah. It's worth it. You know what I mean? When you're selling a product to somebody, you want to know, you know, I sleep better knowing that, you know?
Yes. Yeah. That they're up to the task. Yeah. So living on an island, is it difficult to get supplies? So, I mean, we've already mentioned abrasive belts and so on, but is it difficult to get stuff such as abrasive glues, steels, and all the rest of it?
I mean, for me, I've come across a lot of companies willing to help me because of the exposure of the TV show. And I think a lot has to do with, like, my social media. I put my life on there. You know, you get to know me. And so I think there's been a lot of companies. So I've been extremely fortunate with that, you know, like from all my equipment, they helped me out, you know, they gave me discounts and, you know, supported me. And but I use a lot of reclaimed steel because it's just easier. I can get it. You know, my friend owns a towing company. So, you know, I just grab parts off of cars and things, and you know, and it creates a challenge. I don't ever work with flat steel.
Geez, right, okay.
Yeah.
So tell us about the biggest disaster that you've had in the shop.
I mean, I have a 1 horsepower buffer. That's probably the most dangerous thing in my shop. I've thrown knives into the ceiling. And it's probably the scariest thing that I use.
Yeah, I've had a few slip-ups with buffers. They're, far more dangerous than most people think.
Yeah.
Let's talk about one of our sponsors, Tormach. To get great razor-sharp and repeatable edges, you're going to need a Tormach. To find out more, go to tormach.com, which is T-O-R-M-E-K.com. Okay, let's get back to the show. So I mean, writers, you know, writers have writer's block. But do you ever suffer from any sort of creative block? Do you ever look at a piece of steel and think, what the hell am I going to do with this?
You know, like a lot of artists, they need to be in the mood. They need to, you know, whatever it is that they need to do. I don't. I think one thing that is my biggest, like a lot of people tell me that, oh, I'm talented or this and that. I really don't think that I'm talented or anything special. I think the thing that separates me is I have a pretty good work ethic. I don't need to be in the mood to make knives. I can force myself. And so, no, you know, I think the biggest problem I run into is that my arm's about ready to fall off because I have new ideas every single day.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've been looking at your Instagram feed today, and I can see that family is clearly very, very important to you. But what does your family think of your career?
I'm not really close with my family. I'm actually really close with my son. You know, my son, it's such a huge responsibility being a parent, and I try and be a parent that shows him through example, and that can really be tough. And but he gets to see that every day that hard work pays off, and that's one of the things that. And he's my best friend, you know. I mean, the kid is awesome. I mean, he sits in my shop. He's not always working with me. He's cruising on his iPad, playing his video games and doing. But I don't force him, you know. And he's just a very patient, wonderful person to be around.
Yeah. And he's going to be a great drummer one day, right? I've seen the videos.
he's friends with Will Willis, the host of Forging Fire. So he thinks he's going to take Will's job is what he's going to do. He's going to be a part-time race car. He's going to be a part-time race car driver and a part-time TV show host.
A kid with ambition. That's good. That's good.
Yeah.
So if somebody wanted a knife of yours, how would they do that? How would they contact you?
Yeah, that's a pretty frequently asked question. I don't have a website, and I refuse to have a website because it's not a business for me. It's a passion. So people message me on Instagram and Facebook. I probably have about 500 unanswered messages and about 2 years worth of work. But I just do it one at a time, and anything I can tell anybody interested in getting a knife is persistence is the key to getting to me. And the reason for not having a website is because it's an interaction. You know, I they message me. I answer one message at a time. If I answered everybody's messages, it would be crazy, and I would lose track of whose knife I'm building. And so what I do is I just do one at a time, and I get to know the person. You know what I mean? They tell me where they're from, what they do, you know, and that's the connection I have. I don't want to put my knives on a website and it just goes to somebody I don't know, you know?
And
money is not my main object with it, you know? It's for me, my biggest motivation is being the best that I can be. Yeah. You know, as far as a knife builder and pushing myself. And so money has to come secondary when it comes to that. If not, you'll lose your passion. You'll be making the same knife for the rest of your life. And I'm not willing to do that. And I don't need to do that. And so I really like interacting with the customers one-on-one and creating something that they're going to keep in their family for the rest of their life.
Cool. That's a lovely answer. So I'm going to ask a few questions that I ask every guest at the end of each episode. So the first is, what are you finding challenging? Is there anything that you'd love to make but you haven't quite built up to yet?
I'm really interested in building strong Damascus. Damascus that not just looks beautiful, but can really handle what a mono steel blade can do.
Okay. And whose work do you find inspiring at the moment?
I mean, everybody inspires me because everybody's better than me. You know, I mean, I don't know. I look up to tons of people. I mean, the people that I've trained with is mainly the people. I mean, obviously, you know, Jay Nielsen is somebody I look up to because we could, we're a lot opposite. You know, he is just, even when I work with him in his shop, everything has a place and he's so organized, and I'm so disorganized and I'm very wild. Like my blacksmithing or bladesmithing technique is purely instinct, and he's all knowledge. And so that's the type of people I look up to, because I don't want to survive off of instinct. I want to be able to do both, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, talking about Jay, so I interviewed him for the last episode, and he was telling me about that, you know, like you said, everything has a place in his shop and it's always tidy. And I was editing the show actually in my shop, and I was looking around just thinking, Jesus, the mess on this place, you know?
Yeah.
So what next? You make amazing knives, you know, lethal looking knives. You've appeared on Forged in Fire twice. So what are your plans for 2018 with regards to the knife making?
I'm going to train with a handful of people. Like really awesome people, and I've some awesome opportunities have come up for me, and I'm excited about it, and so I'm going to do some training. I don't train a lot of people here because I'm so new. I shouldn't train anybody. I do have people come to the shop and make their own blade for fun, but I don't train people. I don't teach people. I'm a horrible teacher, but I'm a good learner. And so you know, I got some people I'm working out some details with to train. I'm super excited about it.
Okay, cool. Well, thank you so much for your time, for taking the time out. I'm going to let you get back to your office, shop, and you can carry on with your day.
Thank you very much.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.